Welcome everyone to the 2015 William Hill Belmont Stakes Seminar. My name is Robert Kowalski. I'm the Racing Operations Manager for William Hill US. I'm joined today by my special guests once again, Richard Eng, Dave Tooley. Rich has been with DRF for over 8 years. He's also a columnist for the Las Vegas Review Journal. Rich, how are you?
Doing very well, and I'm looking forward to this Triple Crown try, our first one since last year, California Chrome.
Well, thanks so much for joining us again. And, of course, to my left, Mr. Dave Tooley. Dave, from multiple sources, viewfromvegas.com, ESPN, ESPN Chalk, the section devoted to covering all kinds of sports betting. Dave, what's new?
Same thing. Excited about the Triple Crown run here, and beyond that, getting ready for football.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you both here today. Of course, William Hill is going to have a great Saturday plan for everyone that's going to come out to our race books. A special commemorative Triple Crown t-shirt will be given to everyone making $100 in race wagers, and we're going to be sending one Rewards Club winner and a guest to the Haskell Invitational for a VIP race day experience. I'm going to give you more on that later in the show. Well, we last left our listeners with a rain-soaked Preakness Stakes where pretty much everyone not named American Pharoah was left quite drenched and muddy. And, of course, here in about the next hour or so, Rich, Dave, and myself will break down the eight-horse field and then offer our predictions on the race. All right, gentlemen, ready?
Let's go.
All right, so from post number one, Mouptahij, set with a morning line of 10-1, the toast of Dubai over the first quarter of 2015, could only make an eighth-place finish in the Kentucky Derby. He's bred and trained to handle the distance, and knowing his horse better than anyone, trainer Mike DeCock announced days after the Derby that he was going to stick around and run in the Belmont. He's been very active with multiple works on the New York track. The opposite of his prep work for the Derby, and under fast conditions, I think that this is going to be a pretty big win contender if he could stay within striking distance of the leaders at the quarter pole. Dave, what do you think?
I agree. I think he's very, very live. 10-1. Was hoping that he might be a little bit higher odds.
Yeah, I agree.
But I don't think we got to see him run his best race in the Derby. I mean, obviously, the Derby is such a cavalry charge to the first turn. He kind of got caught in the bunch there. So yeah, I don't think he was able to get as close to the pace as I think he would have needed to be there. So I think in the eight horse field from the rail shouldn't be a problem. Should be able to find his trip. The jockey, Rod Ortiz, knows the Belmont track, so I think it's definitely an upgrade there as well. I mean, I think he's going to be one of those ones that's sitting, off the pace, and if he returns to the form that we saw earlier in the year, I mean, I think he's got a chance to make a run in the stretch.
Yeah, and that's a great point, Dave. You've got a horse that's still relatively unknown. He's only run once here in North America. But with a really good jock, especially in New York and Irad Ortiz, who I think probably should have an advantage, over many of the others, he's going to probably have a really good idea of how to run it, how to make those turns, and see how this whole entire trip plays out for himself. So, Rich, how about yourself? What do you think here?
Well, I think there's a lot of angles to like this horse. He took money in the Kentucky Derby, went off at 14-1 in a large 18-horse field that actually is taking some action. People were high on this horse after he won the UAE Derby in a visually impressive manner by 8 lengths. And I tell you what, folks, after he drew the one post, I went back and watched that UAE Derby again because I kind of remembered him getting a rail trip. And when I did watch the race, he broke from the inside. He sat a pocket trip all the way around. And then coming to the 300-meter mark, which is just a little outside, I believe, the eighth pole in American racing. He just came off the rail, went three wide, and he just exploded in the stretch. And he actually could have won by much more than 8 lengths. So he's a dangerous animal. And, Rob, you had mentioned that Michael DeCock, who's one of the best trainers in the world, when he mentioned a few days after the Derby that he was going to stay in the U.S. and point for the Belmont. Well, when a trainer like DeCock points for a target, they're usually pretty accurate. And one of the first things he did was to hire a New York jockey, Irad Ortiz, who's been the leading rider in New York for the last couple of years, battling Javier Castellano and John Velasquez.
Velasquez, right.
But he's one of the top riders in New York, so the course knowledge, he may not be as good a jockey as Suleiman, who is a world-class rider, but his course knowledge of Belmont Park could really come in handy. And another thing, folks, if you're taking a look at your daily racing form, past performances, this horse has been absolutely drilled to get ready for the Belmont Stakes. He has had six works since the Derby, and if you take a look at the types of works they are, he went 5 furlongs, 3 furlongs, 5 furlongs. He went 5 furlongs on turf. Very, very interesting intervals, and I did some research on Twitter to find out what some of the comments might be on the Twitterverse about the training techniques of Decock, and I saw something from the Sarge and Nick Hines on TVG, and he called this interval training, and he was very high on it, saying this is very interesting strategy. And all I know is if a Todd Pletcher or a Bob Baffert was doing this kind of training, they might get questioned. But I think Michael Decock is a world-class trainer. Very interesting horse.
Although we've got a consensus here on the horse parked on the rail, which in many cases with a race of this distance and a field of this size, a post position likely won't make much of a difference here. Everyone's going to have not a single excuse in how you're going to set yourself up in the best possible way to make a good run at this race. I'll have a couple comments towards the end once we break down our selections on how horses should be run in the Belmont Stakes. So you almost have to make two runs in this one to get yourself into a win position. But without a doubt, Mupta Hij here, all three of us actually are in a consensus, a very live horse here. Number two, Tale of Verve. The morning line set of 15-1. Tale of Verve, of course, made a name for himself with his last to second rally in the Preakness. But the bad news here is, that late run really never worried the champ American Pharoah. Came out of the race well. He had a bullet of a workout at Belmont, clicking 5 furlongs in 59 seconds about on May 30th, I see here. So definitely surprised all of us here. I know we didn't select Tale of Verve to really come anywhere close in the Preakness, but definitely did hoof up and run second in that race. So, Dave, what do you think here about number two, Tale of Verve?
Yeah, like you said, I mean, we all pretty much dismissed him, and I mean, a lot of people did. I mean, from Vegas.com website, I think only 4 people that entered my Triple Crown contest cashed tickets in the in the Preakness because, I mean, and one of them was just because they, had American Pharoah to win. They weren't taking a big stab at a big price. But, killed a lot of tickets for a lot of people. But, he definitely showed, what we talked about on previous shows in the Triple Crown is that, these 3-year-olds can improve dramatically in a short amount of time. I mean, so, if you are looking for prices, I mean, there's definitely horses that jump up in these Triple Crown races we've seen over the years, and we've had a bunch of Belmont winners that have either run poorly in the earlier Triple Crown races or new shooters that have hit at prices over the years. So now I still don't think he's fast enough, I think obviously he was one of those that handled the slop in the late rain that they got there. So I'm still not going to use him. if he's in the money, I'm probably not going to be cashing a ticket again. But, I could certainly understand if someone is going to look at that race and say, hey, this horse is improving at the right time. I wouldn't talk anyone out of a bet.
I'm going to definitely agree with you, Dave. I don't think I'm going to be cashing either if Tale of Verve runs top 3 or, heck, even top 4. Richie, how are your thoughts here on Tale of Verve?
Well, Tale of Verve, when he ran second in the Preakness, prevented me from cashing any tickets on the Preakness because I didn't use him in the second hole. I used him on the bottom of fourth place in the Superfecta, but he killed all my bets. And, as a person who's handicapped horses for a long, long time, when I looked at this race, it kind of looked like, to me, like an optical illusion because if you look at the Preakness again, even look at the chart if you don't look at the replay of the race, the race fell apart. I mean, he passed about 4 horses that were being eased in the stretch. The only horse that he passed that actually was still trying to run late was Divining Rod, and the Divining Rod was by that point in the race getting kind of exhausted, and he just went by him for a second. But I thought it was almost like an optical illusion that he was charging down a lane, because he was certainly in not even the same zip code as American Pharoah. And I remember when we did the Preakness show, I had mentioned that his top buyer career-wise was 72, and he would probably have to improve by about 30 to be competitive. Mm-hmm. Well, he improved to 91, which is career best by many, but he was still seven lengths behind the winner. I would have a difficult time backing him again. I'll probably let him beat me again, guys. That's how hard-headed I am. But interesting rider switch. Joel Rosario rode him in the Preakness, and Joel picked up Frosted. That's a horse he rode in the Kentucky Derby. So you got Hall of Famer Gary Stevens to ride, and what Stevens will probably do if he follows the same directions as Rosario from Dallas Stewart is just let this horse settle. If you're last, if you're way back, don't worry about it. But just at the top of the stretch, you just let him run and see what you can get. And if the Belmont Field falls apart, well, he'll be chugging along again, and he'll probably beat me then.
You know, it's a great point, Rich, that you make about the horse and its race that he ran in the Preakness. I had a feel when we looked at what he did prior to the Preakness. You know, no one expected such a massive jump up from what his norm is. And so that was a real huge top peak. So the first thing I would think of is, well, we're going to have a massive bounce. I don't know Tale of Verve and the pedigree that, I mean, I know it's at a Tale of Akkadi, and Tale of Akkadi had a pretty nice run in his Belmont Stakes. It didn't win, of course, but I don't think that Tale of Verve can hit yet another top is what I'm getting at. And that 15-1 morning line is probably letting us know the same here for the Belmont Stakes on Saturday. Moving on to number three, Made from Lucky at 12-1 for a morning line. Well, you know, Made from Lucky was, you know, take a look back on March 14th, really no match for American Pharoah in the Rebel at Oaklawn. You know, but I'm going to use the tonalist plan, as I call it, by loading in the winner of the Peter Pan on May 9th regardless. Sire Looking at Lucky bypassed the Belmont Stakes after winning the Preakness and later won the Haskell Invitational. So Made from Lucky. Dave, what do you think?
This is another horse I think very, very live indeed. I like the win in the Peter Pan. I mean, obviously run over the same track here, and I believe he's the only one who's won at this track, correct? Yes.
Right.
So you know, if you love a horse for the course, 12-1 looks like a decent price. But I mean, you know, beyond that, I mean, he's also got the running style. Certainly going to be sitting off the pace. Although, I mean, you know, we'll talk certainly a lot about American Pharoah when we get to him. The last four horses that have won Triple Crowns have all won as odds-on favorites, and they've all won wire-to-wire. So he's certainly got the style to fit that to fit that trend. Made for Lucky is definitely going to be one of those that's, content to sit a little bit off the pace. And, again, if we see that, he's peaking at the right time off that win, I think he's got a shot.
Richie?
Well, historically, the Peter Pan has yielded some pretty good results of those horses going into the Belmont. I know Coastal was a Peter Pan winner, and Lemon Drop Kid was a Peter Pan winner, and they went on to win the Belmont Stakes. And I would say this ahead of time, if Made from Lucky actually won the Belmont and upset American Pharoah and prevented him from winning the Triple Crown, I think the first guy would be clutching his chest would be Bob Baffert, because you look at the sire of Made from Lucky. It's a colt called Looking at Lucky, who was one of Bob Baffert's best three-year-old colts in his training career. So in a way, it would be an unlucky defeat if this horse was able to get it done to Baffert. But, you know, we'll have to see. Dave made a good point that this is the only horse to win Belmont. And, you know, that historically is also a positive factor, because the horse for course angle does help. They call Belmont Park Big Sandy because it's a very sandy, cuppy racetrack. It can really be treacherous for a lot of horses that aren't used to it, and they kind of spin their wheels over the sand. And if you showed that you actually like it and can run well over it, that's a big positive. You got Javier Castellano, one of the top jockeys in the world, to ride, no problem there. And one thing that stuck out to me was not the fact that Todd Pletcher is training, and he's one of the top trainers in the United States and the world, but he's been exceptionally hot, this Belmont. I mean, you look at his percentage, he's 19 out of 39. He's winning almost 50% of the horses he saddles at Belmont Park. And you can win a lot of money by betting a hot barn, whether it's at Belmont or Santa Anita or Churchill Downs. When a hot barn is rolling, a lot of times the horses just keep going. So this is one of the two Pletcher horses in the race.
I'm not going to go ahead and tell everybody here's yet another consensus, but you know, Made from Lucky definitely has the right path in my opinion in taking down a race like this. It's, you know, everything makes sense on paper, and you want to plan it out. And of course, you know, with the price of 12-1, you'll probably get about that, maybe a tick or two higher. But definitely a horse to keep your eyes on, especially if the odds start to slip away further and further up, closer to 20 than to 10. So that's number three, Made from Lucky. From post four, Fromento at 30-1 for the morning line. And, well, you know, Nick Zito trains the longest shot on the Kentucky Derby board, who could only manage to pass tired horses. With a lifetime record of 8 starts, 1 win, a place in a show, Fromento's last 3 speed figures, I'm guessing he's going to need at least a 15-point jump to win the Belmont. You know, with that said, you know, this kind of seems to be trainer Nick Zito's hook, thwarting a triple crown with a horse that was in the bomber category. Daytara in 2008, that was 39-1, and then Birdstone in 2004, 34-1. So, you know, Fromento kind of fits the part here for Nick Zito. Dave, what do you think here?
Well, I didn't have Daytara, and I did. And who was the other one?
Birdstone.
And, I did. That's right. I did have Birdstone back in 2004. So, I'm not sure Fromento is as good as either of those. You know, I made a excuse for Mubtahij in the Derby. I'm not quite as willing to make excuse for Fromento here, mainly because Fromento's races prior to that, I don't think are as good as Mubtahij either. So, I just don't think he's got the speed to really be in contention here, or have a big kick to make a run late if the race is to fall apart.
Richie.
Well, I can echo what you said about Nick Zito having a pretty good history in the Belmont Stakes with Daytara and Birdstone, two monster winners that upset Triple Crown runs. And the only thing I can really look at with this horse is the blinkers off. Nick's trying something a little different. But at 69-1 in the Kentucky Derby, he ran like it. And Corey Nakatani opted not to ride back. And they got Mike Smith and pretty good jockey to pick up in Mike Smith, but that's only because Mike is there for the whole weekend, because there's stakes races galore that Mike is participating in. So you might as well pick up a Belmont Stakes mount and give it his best shot. But this would be a pretty good reach for this horse to win. I would expect this horse to be a lot higher than 30-1. The only thing that you can really get excited about is the fact that Nick Zito was training him, but he's just a real plotter. And what's odd about this horse is Nick's trained him his whole career, but this horse has never started at Belmont Park. You would think, being a New York trainer, and Nick Zito, this horse would have started at Belmont at some point, but has not. So this one would be a reach in my book, but heck, we've seen it before.
We've seen it before, and I got to find something here. I see a bull at work here, actually, back on May 30th, but it wasn't at Belmont. Ran 4 furlongs at 48, so it's good for first out of 60, but I'm going to sell. I'm not buying Fromento here. So that's Fromento. Moving on. All right, number 5, American Pharoah. Morning line was set at 3-5. I thought that was about appropriate. Ridden out to the finish line at the Preakness, it looked like American Pharoah's win likely didn't take too much out of him. His work at Churchill Downs on May 26th, actually watched it, pricked up ears, impressive gallop out, showing plenty of energy. My only concern is kind of the arrival to New York didn't happen until the week of, with no, practice time on the track. Each of the last 8 odds-on favorites in the Belmont have lost, of course, including California Chrome last year. Now, what's different here, Rich and Dave?
Well, I'm going to try and beat him, but I mean, obviously he has been at the head of the class here, but you know, when you're going for the Triple Crown, I mean, you're not only going against the horses you're facing, but you're going against history as well. And you know, as we've seen, you know, it takes a real special animal to win these three races at three different tracks, three different distances, and 5 week span. And that's what makes it so hard, you know, especially with all the new shooters getting to come back at you fresh. And so, I mean, if he wins it, he's gonna earn it. But I've had a lot of success in recent years betting against the horse going for the Triple Crown. Not always my top horse wins. I mentioned before that I had Birdstone. It wasn't my top choice that year, but you know, at 36-1, definitely thought he was worth a flyer. Last year had Tonalist and Commissioner Exacta paid $348. So yeah, if you can find the horse to beat the Triple Crown candidate, there's definitely nice payoffs to be had. I still don't think he looks like a Secretariat or Citation or Seattle Slough. I mean, all time classic. Maybe if he proves me wrong, so be it. I'll be applauding him across the finish line, and finally seeing the first Triple Crown after all these years. But mentioned before that he definitely last four that have done it wire to wire. It certainly helps him that he's only facing seven horses. That's even before any potential scratches. So. Most of the Triple Crown winners have also not had to face huge fields, so I think that's why we see there's been more support on the yes at William Hill, people betting not just because they think he's so much better than everyone else, but that he's facing fewer horses than we were thinking he might face at one point. So again, if he does it, I'll definitely applaud it, but he's still got a long way to go, and not just a mile and a half.
That's all great, and you made a great point, actually, Dave, when you talked about where our number is right now at William Hill. Currently American Farrah to win the Triple Crown is all the way up to -155, which has been a pretty good sharp move, but that all occurred once both Carpe Diem and The Truth or Else decided to skip this one and move on to something a little bit easier. So we'll see how it all plays out with our price, and of course this plus plenty of other Belmont Stakes matchups and propositions will be available on Saturday. Go ahead and check those out at our race book. So American Farrah, let's hear your take here, Rich.
Well, there's a lot of interesting angles, pro and con, about American Farrah. Obviously, as a longtime horse racing fan, my heart is rooting for him to win because it'd be nice to see it. First Triple Crown horse since Affirmed in the 78. But as a handicapper and a horse player, and the reason that you folks are out there listening to us is not for us to give you a 3-5 shot or a 1-2 shot and say we love them. The idea is to try to put you maybe in a blueprint, a game plan to try to make some money like Dave was talking about, as he's been able to do in some of the past few Belmonts. Because what happens, just the mathematics of parimutuel wagering, American Farrah is 3-5 and could be less. And not only are people betting on the merits of the horse, but also they're betting on the historical perspective. I don't know how many $2 win tickets are going to be bought by people where if this horse actually did win, we'll never get cash because they want to keep it
correct.
As souvenirs, and along with the Belmont programs and things like that, and the Belmont racing forms and stuff like that. So there is history at play where this horse is going to be a 3-5 at least, and maybe less depending on how many souvenir hunters are in play. There's some angles with the people involved with the horse. Victor Espinoza has had two chances before with Triple Crown mounts, War Emblem and California Chrome. He's lost both times, and now he's opened third time as a charm. And Bob Baffert, this is his fourth time to the dance of trying to win the Triple Crown. He had Silver Charm and Real Quiet and War Emblem get this close, and he hasn't been able to close the deal, although the race with the Real Quiet was an unbelievable finish that year where he got nipped right on the line by Victory Gal. That was an unbelievable horse race if you get a chance to watch again on YouTube or something like that. But American Pharoah, Far and Away, is the horse to beat at a short price. And I guess if I was going to give any sort of advice, layman's terms, to Victor Espinoza, is I would tell him to just ride his own race and not worry about anybody else. Because if you're the best horse in the race and you're riding the best horse in the race, it doesn't matter what the other guys do. Just let them go out and do it. If materiality or somebody else wants to go to the lead, well, let them go to the lead. You just ride your horse like you're riding the best horse in the race. And when the real running starts turning for home, if American Pharoah has enough gas in the tank, and that's what Bob Baffert's kept talking about since the Preakness, he said his job is just to try to keep the horse happy and healthy. And, you know, when you get the Belmont Day and you get to the race itself, there's nothing more he can do. Either the horse has it in him or he doesn't have it in him. And, you know, there may not be anything that he or Victor Espinoza can do at this late date. So, you know, when you ask for the real running to start in the Belmont Stakes at the top of the stretch, either American Pharoah has enough gas left to get it done or he's going to lose again like the other 12 or 13 in the recent decades.
You know, okay, everybody, I went out and did some homework for everybody, right? And so of the 13 horses to have won the Derby and the Preakness since Affirmed, you know, those five looked like locks to win the Belmont, you know, and capture that Triple Crown. I went back, watched the entire Triple Crown series from all those years. I could put any of those performances with American Pharoah's Derby and Preakness, right? So, in fact, you know, most of them were probably even more impressive. You know, it's not hard to go online and, you know, check for yourself. Yeah, I mean, we could go ahead and nitpick and look at pedigree for everybody. But, I mean, look, there's really not much. I mean, look, you know, the dam is Little Princess Emma. I mean, I can't really see much that she's done, you know, on the race course. She's sired by Yankee Gentleman. You know, he, from what I'm seeing, he's only won one non-graded stakes race at 6 furlongs. Okay, that's it. You know, and then, well, you know, on the other side, it was, of course, Pioneer of the Nile. And Pioneer of the Nile, he ran second in the Derby. But, you know, that being said, you know, look, you know, I'm still a sportsman. I'm not totally heartless. You know, I want what's good for the sport, you know. You know, at least once my bankroll's out of the picture, you know, if I could somehow find a winner out of this pack, you know, then I really hope that I am wrong about American Pharoah winning the Triple Crown and creating some new interest, you know, in this sport that I love so much. You know, that's something I'd really love to be wrong about. You know, but, you know, at a price of 3 to 5, you know, Rich, you made a point. You know, we're here, you know, to educate everybody and kind of give a, you know, a good spin on some horses where everyone could kind of, you know, look at it from a betting perspective and find a way to score here on the Belmont Stakes. So, number 5, American Pharoah. Let's take a look here now at number 6, Frosted. 5-1 morning line. This is the Wood Memorial winner, and he was really the only rallier to get within shouting distance of the winner in the 10-furlong Kentucky Derby. You know, back home in New York, took the Preakness off. The son of Tappet will want to be probably one of the biggest threats to win the Belmont, and he's been working out at Belmont for weeks since the Derby. So tell me, Dave, what you think about Frosted?
There's a lot to like about him. I 5-1, I'm expecting that it's going to be a little higher than that, just because, you know, we're talking about American Pharoah is probably going to get bet down no matter what. So, but yeah, has a, you know, like I said, close to be fourth in the Derby. Very similar to the run that Jazzle made for Kieran McLaughlin back when he was fourth in the Derby, skipped the Preakness, and then won the Belmont. So he's got the blueprint there. One thing, when we talked about Made from Lucky having won at Belmont, this is the only other horse to have run at Belmont, but only did it in his second career race, right. Ran second. So, obviously, you know, me looking at current form, again, I'm leaning more towards Made from Lucky, but I'm definitely going to be using Frosted on several tickets.
Rich Yang?
Well, I think there's some real good things to like about Frosted. One is just looking at the pedigree, because when I did my pedigree research using the Brisnet guide, Moub Tahij, Far and Away, has the best pedigree for the mile and a half distance on both the top and bottom. But the second best distance pedigree in the race is Frosted. And so this, on the Bloodlines alone, this horse should not have any problem with the distance. This horse did kind of spin his wheels a bit at Gulfstream Park this winter. They obviously liked him a lot. He was favored in the Holy Bull, and he lost Upstart, and then he got beat in the Fountain of Youth. But the Wood Memorial was a make-or-break race for this horse to make the Kentucky Derby. He came through with just a monster effort, and he ran very well in the Kentucky Derby to be fourth. He was in the back of the pack and had to go very wide under Joel Rosario, and he was really flying through the stretch and just ran out of ground, if you can, in a mile and a quarter race. But this is a horse who is going to probably move forward off the fact that he has had the 5 weeks of rest. This is what Steve Coburn was talking about last year when, you know, he made a big issue. He's one of the co-owners of California Chrome. He was making a big issue about fresh horses waiting for the Derby and Preakness winner in the Belmont. And Frosted would be right up his sleeve for a horse he would call a coward, is what he called him last year when they don't run in all three legs of the Triple Crown. But Frosted is a horse who should benefit from the rest. He's been training great. He's got great connections, and everything says live horse here in my corner.
Yeah, absolutely. Here with Rosario on board now, this is going to be the third race in a row. So definitely a good pairing. I'm positive that they're going to have a real good run here as well. And you're right. They had almost a quantum leap when they moved from Gulfstream to New York at Aqueduct for that Wood Memorial. Big run. Had a real good rank Kentucky Derby where it definitely had a great move forward. And I definitely like this horse to be well up among the leaders and it definitely in the money for the finish for me for the Belmont Stakes. So that's Frosted, number six. Moving on now to number seven, Keen Ice, 30-1 for the morning line. And here's a Son of Curlin. In the Belmont, he did run a race in the Kentucky Derby that kind of looked better to me than it was on paper. You know, then again, it's, you know, the only other race that Keen Ice has won in seven starts is a maiden special weight back in September at Churchill Downs. And yeah, I know I did say this a couple of weeks ago about Tale of Verve, but, you know, Keen Ice definitely has only really shown me any kind of a significant effort way back in September. So tell me more, Dave.
Well, I've heard some people that actually do think this one has an upsetter's chance. I'm not totally high on him, but I'm definitely going to be using him underneath an exotics. Like I said, I mean, you know, was running late in the Derby and a bunch of other races. He's kind of been running late too, but you know, a lot of that's you know, picking up the pieces, passing really tired horses. Some of his time, you know, his times don't stack up with, some of the top contenders here. But I mean, this is a horse that, you know, if you're looking for that long shot that really just comes from nowhere and shocks everybody, I mean, he kind of has that look, you know, that again, I mean, the fact that he has been passing animals in the stretch, you know, maybe he does want the longer distance. So I mean, I can see some reasons to like him. I will be, like I said, I will be using him underneath probably. Don't know how many tickets I'll have with him on top, but I just like some of the other contenders better.
All right, very well. How about you, Rich?
Well, here's another horse with really excellent pedigree for going long. He's a Son of Curlin, who was a champion handicap horse, and on the dam side, Awesome Again is the sire of the dam, and he was a Breeders' Cup Classic winner in his generation. So no question this horse has the pedigree to go a mile and a half. And I thought there'd be some irony if Kent DeSarmo was able to somehow win this Belmont Stakes, because he's been a jockey on two tries for the Triple Crown, and Big Brown and Real Quiet. One of the horses was eased, and the other horse lost by an inch. And if he was able to upset with the Keen Ice, it would be almost ironic in some way that the Sermo gets up. But this is going to be a pretty good price, 20-1 in the morning line. And he's only got one way of going. He's going to be in the back of the bus with a Tale of Verve and maybe Fermento. And there are going to be three long shots just plotting up to see what they can get in the stretch. I know I used him underneath in my Kentucky Derby wager. I did hit the super that day when I ran 1-2-3-4. But if a horse like this at 45-1 had somehow plotted a little faster and gotten fourth, it would have helped the price of the super. But I might try the same strategy again. He's going to be a plotter, and he's just going to be running late. And Kent's had enough experience at Belmont by now to know what to do and what not to do to try to win this race.
All right, there's number seven, Key Nice. Moving on to the last of eight, Materiality, with a morning line of 8-1. Son of Belmont Stakes winner, A Fleet Alex, missed the break in the Derby. And honestly, who knows what the results would have been if Materiality got out clean. The experience for this Florida Derby winner will definitely be a plus. And his works have been excellent, not overly aggressive since then. Like Frosted, he also bypassed a Preakness on the way to New York. So, Dave, what's your take here on Materiality?
A Fleet Alex, I believe, was the last Belmont favorite to win, if I'm not mistaken. And again, that was off of his unbelievable Preakness win when he went down to his knees heading into the stretch. So one of the true athletic feats in horse racing. But Materiality, I think, is kind of the X factor here. He's a horse with, tremendous upside, very lightly raced. We said that before the Derby. And definitely didn't get to see him run his race in the Derby either. I was expecting him to be one of those pace factors right out to the front. After some of the scratches, he got to, they moved the post out from the rail. So I think that actually hurt him that he didn't go to the front, although also stumbled out of the gate, which didn't help. So, I don't think we saw his best effort there. And so, this is another one of those horses that disappoints in the Derby and then gets the 5 weeks off to take another shot. I think, Colburn's comments last year after the, Belmont, definitely sour grapes. I mean, the races are what they are. I mean, just, if you have a horse that's bred to run a mile and a half, why should you have to run in the shorter races? Why wouldn't you just put them in the race they're bred for? So, I mean, there's three distinct races, but that's what makes the Triple Crown so challenging. So, in my perfect world, Materiality would be the horse that pushes American Pharoah on the lead, makes him go faster earlier than he wants to go. Do a little speed duel that sets it up for some of the off the pace runners that I'm looking at. But I will be using him in my exotics as well, because I think he does have a chance. Again, if you throw out that Derby and you're looking at a horse that could be just peaking at the right time, I could see him in the winner's circle.
Richie.
I was actually a little surprised that Materiality was made the third choice in the morning line instead of the second choice, because I really thought coming out of the Kentucky Derby this would be the wise guy horse leading into the Belmont, because he, out of all the horses in the Derby, I thought he had the toughest trip, and it was actually visually obvious to see some of the problems he had, because when he got off slow, he wasn't meant to be 13th at the first call or the second call. He was meant to be forwardly placed among, right, say, the top three or four in the field. And then when he was trying to rally under Castellano, he was weaving in and out, trying to, getting into trouble, getting out of trouble. He never really had a clear path. And so I really thought this was going to be the wise guy horse, and I fully expected him to be the second choice in the morning line. And, he might be the second choice in the betting, because a lot of the wise guy players have seen what I saw and what others have seen. So anyway, his two races at Gulfstream Park were both just brilliant performances. The Florida Derby, he outgamed a very talented horse called Upstart, and he was very live, undefeated going into the Kentucky Derby, and he could have done better with a little more racing luck. And I think for his running style, drawing the outside post actually is a real plus, because he's got natural speed. If he just breaks normal, jockey John Velazquez should be able to pick any spot he wants going into the first turn, whether that means he goes to the lead and then American Pharoah sits behind him, or American Pharoah goes to the lead and he sits off of him. He should be able to dictate exactly what he wants to do from that post. And, you know, if you look at some of the horses inside him, you know, horses like Tale of Verve and Fermento and Keen Ice are all going to drop back. They have no speed. Right off the bat, three of the eight horses in the field are going to be in the back of the bus before you hit that first turn. So he's just got a beautiful opportunity, Velasquez, to get good racing position. And, you know, that means an awful lot, especially when you're going a mile and a half. You don't want to give up too much ground. Tactically, you want to ride a sound race. And, you know, his pedigree suggests out of a Fleet Alex, a Belmont winner in his own right, and a Preakness winner, that the distance is not going to be an issue. And we go back to the Todd Pletcher angle. He is unbelievably hot at the Belmont meet, 19-39. So this is the other Pletcher. And this horse would not surprise me one bit if he upsets the apple cart on Saturday.
19-39 is actually amazing if you just think about it from a trainer angle. But you know, I just spotted another thing, and you know, I know I should have seen this, and I have nothing against Castellano as a jockey here, but Materiality was run with Velasquez on board from day one back on January 11th at Gulfstream. Ran him to a win in the maiden special weight. Ran him to another win in March, and then, of course, in the Florida Derby, a win, all with Velasquez on board, with a $110 buyer, no less, leading into the Kentucky Derby. And then, you know, we have him on board again here for the Belmont Stakes, so I'm always one to take a look and see how many, you know, pluses I could put in front of a horse, and I've got a lot of pluses in front of Materiality here. So 1-8. Ladies and gentlemen, that's our take on an analysis on what we feel each of these horses have and what they could bring to the table. So now, you know, for our top selections for the Belmont Stakes, let's go ahead and, you know, why not? Go ahead, and Dave, let's start off with you. Let's hear your breakdown here. What do you think, you know, from a betting perspective, who you have in the win, maybe exacta trifecta runners? What do you like here?
Okay, I'm going to make my top choice, number 3, Made from Lucky. Like we talked earlier, you know, I like how he should be sitting off the pace, should have a clean trip, and should be, you know, running late. Also like the win over the Belmont course. I think that's a major plus. Now I also like Moom Tahij, the number 1 at 10-1. Now, you know, I'm talking right now, you know, again, Made from Lucky, 12-1. I would definitely bet to win. Now, if, you know, Made from Lucky gets bet down, let's say, to 9-1, maybe people do like that horse for course angle. And if Moom Tahij were to, like, drift up to 15-1, I would probably be more likely to make my win bet on him. But, again, I'm going to be using both of those extensively in exactas, tries, and supers. The other ones I like are number 6, Frosted, and number 8, Materiality. And, of course, I'm going to use, you know, American Pharoah in there and in a bunch of my exotics because, you know, try and make some money even if he does get in there, if you can connect the dots, even in an 8-horse field. Should be able to find some prices if we can get one of the other ones on top.
All right, so Dave, Made from Lucky, Moom Tahij, and then let's call it in a spot 3 and 3C, Frosted and Materiality. And, of course, just like I would suggest to anyone playing pick 3s and pick 4s, you got to have American Pharoah in there as an exotic saver. So that I have that correct?
Yeah,
all
exactly.
Right. Richie?
Okay, well, I'll start by saying that regardless of my top 4 selections, the way I will bet the race, I will give American Pharoah a chance to win and cash in my pocket, as well as have my heart jump up and say, hey, Triple Crown horse. So I'm not going to be dumb enough to let this horse win and prevent me from cashing anything at all. But my caveat is the fact that if I'm going to try to make a score on the race, I would prefer another horse to win. As far as my top choice, I kind of had a battle in my brain between the 1, Moom Tahij, and the 8, Materiality. On numbers, I probably should pick Materiality to win. His race in the Florida Derby, I thought, was the best race of the entire Triple Crown prep season, the Triple Crown races. If he runs back to that number, these other horses are going to have to really go get him. But there's something with the intangibles of Mubtaihij that made me go his way. I know he should be a bigger price. He's 10-1 versus 6-1, but there's something about Michael de Kock and the way this horse has been training. I really think he's a real wild card in the race, so I'm just going to take a shot and put him on top. Mubtaihij is my top choice. Materiality, a very close second choice. I'm going to pick American Pharoah as my third choice, and my fourth horse, fellas, will be Frosted, who could just as easily better that rating. There's a lot of positives to him, so that's my 1-4, Rob.
Mubtaihij, Materiality, American Pharoah, and Frosted, 1-4 for Rich. I'm going to go ahead and really kind of almost mimic you here, Rich, but I want to tell all you guys why. The thing you have to kind of look at is when you handicap a race, you want to try and map out and try and figure out, you know, how the pace is going to play out, who's going to be in a position to win. And again, as I mentioned, you want to take a look and see who's going to be at an advantage and a disadvantage in a race going at a mile and a half. But let me backtrack a bit and talk about some of the horses that I like here. You know, Frosted, in my opinion, I thought Frosted was the most impressive runner on Derby Day. He had the longest trip. He actually traveled 6,730 feet. American Pharoah traveled 6,723 feet in this race. And he was coming like a train. He needed just a little bit of pace. And I thought the top three pretty much got away with murder on the front end. Had that race had some pace, it's very possible, you know, likely in my opinion, that Frosted should have worn the roses that day. Materiality definitely had trouble coming out of the gate and ended up with a horrible trip and still came back for sixth. He should have been up front with the leaders, and I think that his grinding style is going to be great for the Belmont. And, of course, Mubtaihij, who I was very, very high on for our show, for the Kentucky Derby. I think he's going to improve greatly for his second race here since he shipped. I don't think he could win, but I'm not going to consider someone crazy for thinking so. I'm going to be in that same camp as well. But you know the works again have been incredibly impressive. The distance, not even a question, it's not going to be a factor at all here. You know, I don't think that, you know, it's the closers that are going to be at a disadvantage, you know, going at a mile and a half here at Belmont because of the track size and the conformation. I think it has more to do with the fact that the pace is usually soft up front. So one-run late closers, I don't think, stand a chance here. The deep closers need to make two moves. And this is what I was talking about when I'm watching a Belmont Stakes develop. One, to place themselves in contention by the half-mile pole. And then another to overtake the leaders in the last quarter. You know, the Belmont stretch is kind of short, about a furlong and a half. They've run over a mile and a quarter to that point. And those whose stamina would have already, you know, spit the bit, you know, anyone with a clear lead at that furlong pole would usually be home free, although Smarty Jones probably might beg to differ there. you know, so I believe at that half-mile pole, the Colts in contention will be American Pharoah, Materiality, Mubtaihij, Frosted, and Made from Lucky. So again, names that, you know, my friends and colleagues here have already mentioned, you know, in the win position. If Ortiz Jr. can make a premature move with Mubtaihij, it's going to force American Pharoah's hand. Castellano and Rosario will probably sit back waiting for that quarter pole to make their move. I don't think Made from Lucky will go on. My best educated guess here is that Materiality will appear on top, entering the stretch with Frosted right behind. Mubtaihij will outlast American Pharoah for that show spot, and you know that's how I see it. So I'm going with Materiality, Frosted, Mubtaihij, and American Pharoah. And with that said, anyone playing, you know, pick threes, pick fours, you know, the nice, you know, deep exotic wagers, I would definitely never tell you to bet, you know, or make a ticket without having American Pharoah win there, because even at the price, it's going to give you a really nice payout on a ticket like that. Well, so now on Saturday, the 13 race card, which begins at 8:35 here locally, there's going to be four wagers that are going to have guaranteed pools. Speaking of those pools, the early pick five It starts in race number one. That's going to be guaranteed at $500,000. Last year, that pick five handled over $1 million. There's a guaranteed pool of $250,000 for the pick three that begins on race number three. Last year, that pick three handled over $350,000. The pick six starts on race number six. That goes off of the morning. Looks like the post time is going to be 11:34 locally. That ends with the Belmont Stakes. We're going to have a guaranteed pool of $1.5 million there. Last year, that pick six handled a little over $1.9 million. And, of course, the pick four, that starts on race number eight at 1 p.m., comprised of the Just a Game, the Metropolitan, the Manhattan, and the Belmont Stakes will have a guaranteed pool of $1.5 million. And, yes, last year that wager handled over $3.7 million. So, and, of course, with all that, you know, there's still three pick fours on that card, one starting in race two, one in race eight, and then one in race number 10. So, great, great menu that New York Racing has offered for Belmont Stakes on Saturday. You know, we're going to take a look here and see, you know, of course, with all the different things that we have to offer just from a parimutuel perspective, you know, head on over to a William Hill racebook on Saturday. You're not going to be disappointed. Find one, of course, near you at williamhill.us/racing. This weekend, you know, where, of course, we're going to have horse racing matchups for the Belmont Stakes, other propositions for you all to wager on, including will American Pharoah win the Triple Crown, which, as I mentioned, is currently up to minus 155 on the yes. The 2015 Eclipse Award for Horse of the Year. And, you know, as I hinted earlier, William Hill is going to be sending one William Hill Rewards Club winner to the Haskell Invitational this year at Monmouth Park. And it's, of course, this August 1st and 2nd, and here's how you can enter. Have to be a William Hill Rewards Card member. Sign up is free. It just takes a minute at any William Hill Race and Sportsbook. On Saturday, June 6th, of course, Belmont Stakes Day, just make $1 in race wagers on your rewards card at any William Hill Racebook near you to be electronically entered. If you are selected, you and a guest are going to the Haskell Invitational Monmouth Park. Pretty simple. It includes round-trip airfare, two nights hotel stay, VIP tickets to the William Hill private box at Monmouth Park, and $300 in travel cash. Who else does that, guys? Well, Dave, Rich, it's been a pleasure, this Triple Crown run, you know, to be here with the both of you and hear your expertise and your take on it. Dave, you know, again, where can listeners find your insights online through social media?
Social media, Twitter, at View from Vegas. That's also my viewfromvegas.com website. And most of my articles these days are at ESPN.com. Like you mentioned, the ESPN chalk section with sports betting and this time of year, horse racing.
It's all great information on there. Do check it out. Again, it's viewfromvegas.com. And you could even go into the ESPN search box and just type in Dave Tulin, and you'll see his columns and his pieces online there. Rich, how about you? Okay, where can we find you online again?
Well, I am the turf editor for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, so I handicap Southern California every day that they race. So you can get that either online or the hard copy here in Nevada. And I have a Friday column in which this Friday I'll be writing a lot of the things that we just talked about here on this podcast. If people want to follow me on Twitter, my Twitter handle is RichEng4, the number 4, Pro Pick. And it's everything spells out the way it sounds, RichEng, the number 4, PROPICK.
Well, and of course, you could find me at Ridden Out on Twitter, you know, but better yet, just come on by and meet me at a William Hill racebook near you. You know, even though I'm out here in Vegas, I come out and visit all 11 of our racebooks throughout the state, north, south, east, and west, pretty much every weekend. So I'm looking forward to meeting each and every one of you out there, and come on down. So, hey, there you have it. That's our take on Saturday's Belmont Stakes. Thank you all once again for joining us today, and may all of your photo finishes always go your way at William Hill, the home of betting.